Greetings, fellow Portlanders. From the Emerson News Network, this is Legion of News.
From high above the milk packing district in the heart of beautiful southeast Portland, Oregon, this, my friends, is Legion of News, a one-hour distillation of all important knowledge from everywhere. My name is Rick Emerson alongside Don Taylor, who is, even now, readying a vast swath of happenings, including the following.
A Craigslist ad leads to an assault by teenagers, a body is found on McLaughlin Boulevard, and a fake torpedo is found at a construction site.
As always, my friends, have no doubt that this conglomeration of factual discourse and ideological screed will render you shocked, amazed, enraptured, and demonstrably more intelligent than when you began this hour. And now, without further ado, pay heed, for this is Legion of News.
Good afternoon, I'm Dawn Taylor, and this is absolutely everything you need to know for Monday, August 30th, 2010. A Vancouver man was assaulted by three teenagers he met on Craigslist. This happened Wednesday afternoon in the parking lot of Safeway in the 3700 block of Main Street in Vancouver, Washington.
Was he meeting them for the sex?
No, actually.
The drugs?
No.
He wasn't meeting them just to be assaulted because he's kinky, is he?
No.
Not that I would be opposed to such a thing.
Okay.
Those were your three guesses.
Those are my only guesses.
Zach Petty met the teens when he answered an advertisement for a broken iPad.
Oh.
Petty said something seemed strange right away.
They started beating me in the face with a crowbar.
The guy said, oh, I have an iPad. And he was carrying a backpack, and I never really saw the iPad, said Petty. Seconds later, the teens attacked him. They came up behind me and hit me with their skateboards, and they screamed, give me all your money, give me all your money. The 21-year-old did not have any money on him. Instead, the teenagers ripped off his backpack, wallet, debit cards, and identification. A witness followed the boys to 39th Street and I-5, but they got away. It was more of an unfortunate series of events that happened, said Petty. I don't think anyone is stupid enough to mug someone in the middle of the day.
And certainly nobody is stupid enough to go meet three teenagers in the middle of a parking lot to buy a broken iPad from them.
Despite his misfortune, Petty said he will continue to buy and fix broken electronics. He will just be extra cautious. Carry pepper spray, he said.
If somebody had a broken... I mean, the thing only came out like 5 minutes ago. If somebody had a broken iPad, don't you think they would just be getting that fixed by the proper Apple authorities?
You would think that.
Yeah.
What
do I know? All right.
Milwaukee police launched a death investigation Monday morning after someone found a body in the northbound lanes of McLaughlin Boulevard. Paramedics said they found a 26-year-old man dead when they arrived at McLaughlin near 22nd Avenue shortly after 2 a.m. The man's body showed obvious signs of trauma, officers said, and investigators said they're working to determine whether a passing car hit him or whether a train struck him and caused him to fall from the Portland and Western Railroad trestle located above the road.
Isn't that where they're doing all that construction? I think they got everything torn up on McLaughlin at, McLaughlin at whatever.
The weather's warm. Everything is torn up everywhere.
It's like McLaughlin at the 50th strip joint once you passed, Showcase Music or whatever that place is.
Is that the Acropolis out there?
Yeah, well, it's that whole area, and it's not Showcase Music. There's some, I think it's Hollywood Light and Sound or something. Anyway, that is right at an intersection between about 700 different strip clubs. And if you're trying to get anywhere at all out there, It just takes an exponentially greater amount of time than it would have, 6 months ago, because they've just got everything on Earth is just torn up, and they're doing, to their credit, they are doing most of the construction at night, but it is a difficult area to pass.
All right, to traverse.
That's what I'm saying. Here's Dawn Taylor.
A bomb squad was dispatched to a Philadelphia construction site after someone found what turned out to be a non-functional replica of a torpedo. A Transportation Department archaeological team found someone sitting on the finned tube Friday morning. And I have a little audio here.
It really appears that this was simply a novelty item.
Oh, wait, that's the wrong one. Here we go. Let's try this again. A Transportation Department archaeological team found someone sitting on the finned tomb Friday morning.
Decorative in some way, if that's your taste.
Are any of these going to be the...
Observed a male, a white male in his 30s with a scruffy beard who appeared to be homeless sitting on top of it, and he claimed that he had spent the last 6 hours dragging it out to that location. And I can assure you that he did not.
So, wait a minute. So, a homeless guy, I'm so confused. So, they're at a construction site?
Yes, there's a construction site. Bomb squad was called because...
Some guy says, isn't this a torpedo?
There's a torpedo. And they went out and they found a homeless guy sitting on the torpedo.
He says, I found this and I drug it out here.
Right. Except the problem is that it was massively huge and weighed like hundreds and hundreds of pounds. So they don't think the homeless guy actually did that. Three bomb disposal technicians couldn't turn it over due to its massive size. So the authorities approached with caution, called the bomb squad. They x-rayed the shell and discovered that there was nothing inside of it. It was just a fake torpedo. They then hoisted it onto a convoy.
You're just saying all this like it makes sense, and it doesn't. Why would a fake torpedo exist? In what sphere of anyone's existence would they say, you know what we need today? Fake torpedo.
Well, maybe you have, say, a World War II-themed restaurant.
No one has a World War-themed Jew restaurant. Guess again.
Or you're some kind of like a nutty war veteran, and you emptied out the nose cone of an old torpedo, and you have it like hanging over your garage.
Those guys keep track of their torpedoes. I don't think that's a plausible explanation either. It seems like that guy, and that also if it weighs hundreds and hundreds of pounds, it's not like it's a thing you're going to misplace. Not like you're carrying it next to your pocket watch, and it just slips out through a hole in your trousers. Honey, where did my replica torpedo go? Have you seen it was just in my dungarees moments ago? Now a homeless man is skulking away with it into the night.
Well, they did say there was no charge, no mechanisms inside it. It was completely hollow from end to end.
So it doesn't sound like a replica of a torpedo. Maybe it sounds like a deactivated torpedo.
Or just a fake. Yeah, I don't know. But so here's Joe Sullivan again.
It really appears that this was simply a novelty item. It is decorative in some way, if that's your taste.
It's a decorative, if that's your taste.
If that's your taste.
If you like to sit around while having dinner and reminisce about the Battle of Anzio, you can do that. So it's like from the Acme Gag and Novelty Company. It was right next to the X-ray specs and the 10-in-1 scope.
Well, police say that it appears it initially was dumped in the woods by a larger vehicle that witnesses said they saw someone with a big truck taken it over there apparently at some point earlier. It was later dragged into the construction site, likely by someone hoping to sell it for scrap.
See, no, that's why I instinctively believe the homeless guy. When the homeless guy says, because it's not like he said I was just carrying around with me or just I found it
and
brought it over. When he says that he actually had been spending all day dragging it along, that's a thing I believe. Because there's nobody more motivated than some meth head that's just going to take something over to the metal scrap yard and sell it for drug money.
Well, from what they could tell at the site, whoever had tried to drag it previously had attached it to a vehicle and it tore off their back bumper.
So that's probably what it was.
So it was pretty heavy.
So somebody probably originally stole it. So it was probably a two-part theft, however inadvertently so. So somebody probably stole it from some guy's house where it was just... Because my grandfather had a bunch of crap like that. In addition to his, I fear, all-too-real Nazi memorabilia, he had a bunch of, things that nobody should have, like deactivated landmines, and landmines that I think maybe were partially deactivated, like when he died.
Was he one of those guys that had, like, a grenade sitting on his desk as a paperweight?
But you always got the sense that it wasn't a thing that he purchased, like, at the mall, at a gag shop. You got the thing that it was, you get the sense that it was he purchased it from other guys who maybe weren't entirely forthcoming with their relatives about what they kept in the basement. So I bet they stole it from this guy's house. They got it, like, halfway or wherever was where they were taking it. And then, as you said, it tore the bumper off because it weighed hundreds and hundreds of pounds. And then the homeless guy, probably because it's a torpedo, which means even if it has fins, it rolls. So the homeless guy spent 6 or 7 hours getting it maybe another 100 yards, which is when he was taking a break for lunch or high tea or something. And they came along and they found him.
Yeah, it somehow whoever had dumped it at the construction site, at any rate, apparently had brought it there with a boat hitch. Attached to a boat hitch. This was seen by a witness named Junior Rivera. And this is Junior Rivera telling you what he saw.
All right. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Okay. I seen three guys coming here, and that's a bomber. I didn't know it was a bomber. I thought it was a body, and it was wrapped up. And I went and looked. It was too long to be a body. It was like about 12 foot long.
Where is this at?
Really,
is this in Philadelphia?
Yes.
All right. It must be an interesting life you lead there in Philadelphia.
I thought it was a body, but it was too long to be a body.
I thought it was just some other guy that they were dropping off. Just some other, you know, some other conglomeration of the bones and organs. Because that happens 5 or 6 times a day in this neighborhood. Dawn just angrily yanked a vuvuzela off the Legion of News desk and hurled it to the floor. Just with the greatest of, with the most extreme of prejudice, did you pick up that vuvuzela and throw it down on the ground?
Yes, we share a studio with people who like to decorate the desk with tchotchkes.
And the
tchotchkes are just growing and growing and growing every day. And now I'm just, like, shuffling tchotchkes around so that I could find a place to put my crap while I'm working.
And so by people, we mean Greg and Sarah from Front Employment Radio. And I made the observation that if you were to come in here to the studio, well, first of all, I think you still have more counter space than I do. Now, that is because my side of the table is taken up with broadcasting equipment. Yours, I think I said it was like you were running your own little private Spencer's Gifts over there.
I've got a slap chop. I got a stripper clock. I got a bobblehead Arnold Schwarzenegger doll. I got an empty True Blood bottle. I got some kind of a foam hat with a shark on it. There's a tugboat toy.
With big googly eyes.
And a Phantom of the Opera guy.
Now, that he sings, I think, if you press his leg.
And then there's a talking Dennis Miller doll, which is the only thing that belongs to us.
Yeah, so to be fair, the talking Dennis Miller doll is actually ours. So, all right. And just think, we've been here less than 90 days. Imagine what your side of the studio will look like in, another 6 months or so.
We've put some shelves up here or something, and then they can, like, put their things up on shelves and display them, and then they're not actually on the desk.
Boy, that's the tone of a married woman. That is the particular kind of inflection that only comes from a woman who is used to dictating those orders to her husband. What we're going to do is we're going to put some shelving in here, and then your model trains and Kiss dolls can go up on the wall, okay? That's great. Fantastic. Try to have that done in a day, would you? Okay. I'll be downstairs.
Kiss dolls, Has someone heard that tone themselves?
Theoretically speaking. It's all part of making my home tidier and more livable. On that subject, we should take a moment to talk about Mr. Michael Beatty, the proprietor of The Cleaning Solution. And I've talked about this for the last week or so, that we've got a friend coming to visit us from out of town, Laura and I do, and it's that when you finally see it through, when you see your home not only through somebody else's eyes, but somebody else's prospective eyes, in other words, you realize that somebody's going to be at your house in the next day or so, and something that you have managed just to not even block out, it's just that you're used to it because you see it every day. For example, if you're standing in the bathroom at my home, and then there's this hallway immediately outside the bathroom that sort of branches off into two separate areas of the house, like one where the bedrooms are and one where the living room is, and there's just this large spot on the carpet, and I don't know what it's from. It's one of those things that you can't really ascribe to any kind of particular stain. Like, it's not, how do I put this? It's not something the dog caused one way or the other. It doesn't look to be a food stain. It looks for all the world like somebody just poured a bunch of 30-weight motor oil into the carpet. Now, I'm fairly certain that no one who lives at the house has done that, unless there's a lot that goes on there that I'm just sort of not privy to. In any event, but it's one of those where I now realize that your choices are, you know, you either just buy another rug to set there, which means that your entire home is filled with sort of small area rugs, or you just remove that section of the carpet altogether, you know, and then you just pretend that you're having some sort of work done on the wood, that you've got termites or whatever. And so I had to strip it all up here because it's now we've got dry rot, you know. And
is that better than having a stain, by the way, telling your guests that your floor is rotting?
Or we're infested with insects. No, I'm sorry, there's small wood-eating creatures that are lurking in the baseboards by the millions. Sleep well. Or you can just call Michael Beatty. If only I hadn't sent so many prospective customers his way that he was probably racked up from here until like the middle of next week. You can call him at 971-533-3211. Michael Beatty, The Cleaning Solution is the name of his business. They do stain removal, carpet repair. They will work on your upholstery, stone, marble, tile. Pretty much if you walk on it, they will take care of it, as they say. Pet damage and upholstery repair as well. If you get your fabric and the furniture and you get the stain on that as well. They do residential and doing commercial work, and they'll do a maintenance program, which means that once they get it back, actually back up to snuff, they can keep it looking as good as the day you got it or the day you got it repaired. The cleaning solution, Michael Beatty, can be reached at 971-533-3211. 971-533-3211. And here's the thing, and now I realize that it is 1219, so in 40, and you sons of bitches, I'm calling this now. In 41 minutes when we get off the air, I actually am just going to call him and see if he can, like, squeeze me in the next day or so. Because otherwise, it's like you're just going to be filled with shame, you know? Because you realize then that they're going to be going back home, taking with them a tale that they had to stay with some guy whose house is just, you know, some sort of glorified hog pen. And no one wants that.
No.
Here's Don Taylor at the Legion of News News Desk.
I have been informed by a couple of people on the text box that we have a low-grade electronic hum going underneath of everything, and we don't hear it here.
Well, hold on a second. Let me just... Well, that's not even a hum. There's an open channel noise, but that's always there. That's just because our mics are on. We're not speaking.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, there's this sort of low-level kind of...
Was it from me being plugged in?
It's probably your computer. Hold on a second. Let me just... not to blame everything on your computer. Go ahead and plug your computer in.
That's probably it.
Well, there's certainly
there
that.
Go.
Yeah, I don't know.
Well, I'm unplugged now, so...
I will say that the signal sounds very clean on our end.
Yes.
Somebody can sort of explicate the nature of the noise, quantify it with some greater degree of specificity, then you let us know. But the signal sounds clean on our end. Maybe it's just something in your head.
No, apparently that was it. It was my computer being plugged in.
Well, so. You've got an HP, and don't get me wrong. I have many friends who own HP products. A friend of mine who works at HP, it's a fine company. But their laptops tend to create a great deal of noise. So I think at almost any time somebody's hearing a strange hum coming from the studio, it's probably that machine.
Or just me sitting here just humming to myself.
All right. Here's Don Taylor.
Prices at the pumps are 7 cents cheaper than they were 2 weeks ago. Now average $2.70 a gallon. Market analyst Trilby Lundberg. That's a great name, by the way.
What is her name?
Trilby Lundberg.
Is Trilby one? Is it Trill?
No, Trilby
as in begonia, or Trilby as in like,
Trilby.
T R I L L B Y.
One L, but
one
yes.
L.
Trilby.
Okay.
Trilby Lundberg.
Fantastic.
Said some drivers are paying more, some less.
Is that the best analysis she can possibly give? Some people are paying more. On the other hand, some people are paying less.
Hence the term average.
Okay.
The range we have in our current panel is from St. Louis at 239 up to about 313 in San Francisco.
Okay. Have another parliament, Trilby.
Trilby's voice does not sound nearly as melodious as her name would imply.
I thought that she was going to be sort of pixie-like. She spoke, she would have sort of a burbling, spry kind of sound to her voice. Trilby instead sounds like a Martha. That's what she sounds like.
Lundberg is reluctant to predict whether prices might fall even more.
The seasonality of our gasoline demand doesn't really compare to the power of the price of crude. So it'll depend mostly on what crude oil prices do.
All right. Well, thanks so much. I am one of those guys, like when the politicians run for office and there's always some jackass reporter that says, Senator, how much do you think a gallon of milk costs the average American? And then the senator doesn't know what it is because, he didn't buy it. And so therefore he's out of touch and whatever. I am that guy when it comes to, first of all, a lot of things. I don't know that I could tell you what a gallon of milk costs, and I buy gallons of milk all the time. You know why? It doesn't matter. I'm going to buy it. Just same thing with gas. I can never tell you at any given moment what a gallon. I think I put gas in my car yesterday. Couldn't begin to tell you how much it was per gallon. Why? Because it's not like I have a choice. I mean, if the price goes up, what am I going to do? Am I going to just skateboard to work? No. So I will continue to put gas in my car, and I will continue to not know. Which doesn't mean that it's not too much in some sort of vague relative way. It just means it doesn't really. I mean, it's a thing that's completely pointless.
Yeah, I generally don't know how much things cost specifically because I have a general idea of how much things are going for because I will look at ads in the paper and things like that. But I'm the one who plans the meals and I'm the one who makes the lists and I'm the one who does.
That's hard to believe.
Manages most of the cooking, but I send my husband to go to the grocery store, so he's the one who actually does the hands-on comparing in the store of things to things.
So it's interesting. It's sort of you hunt, but he gathers.
Pretty much.
That's really what it is. And so you figure out exactly what it is the tribe needs. And then he's actually the one who is then sent out to fetch it in a basket and bring it home.
Exactly.
Okay. How much is a loaf of bread?
I mean, I'm not talking about some weird day-old bread like at the government, like at the welfare store. But I'm also not talking about like the, you know, like a Jack Sprat sprouted wheat bread kind of a thing.
The inexpensive bread, the like store brand inexpensive kind of wheat bread is about, is like two something.
See, I would have no idea if that's even accurate.
And it's like $5 plus for like, what's his name's killer bread,
which
is Dave's killer bread, which is awesome. So that's always a splurge where I go, let's get the good bread.
Yeah.
But usually we buy the cheap bread.
Here's the thing about that bread is it's sort of, I don't know, it's great but a little unnerving when you pick up a loaf of Dave's bread or, again, like a sprouted wheat bread and it weighs like 70 pounds.
Yeah.
Because then you wonder, you think, first of all, is this even healthy for me? Like, are these, like, especially with the sprouted wheat bread, where you just think, like, is it going to continue to sprout in my stomach? Is this going to sprout inside my body while I'm eating it? Well, we had that story, what was it, 3 weeks ago about the guy who had, like, an apple tree growing in his lung or something?
Yeah.
And so when I'm eating...
He breathed in a pea or something.
And so when I'm eating sprouted wheat bread, I just think to myself, like, will this continue to blossom while it's, you know, inside my internal organs?
Whenever I start to have thoughts like that, I generally console myself with the idea that stomach acid will kill almost anything.
So you'd think. But if that were the case, you wouldn't have to worry about, like, tapeworms, for example, or any sort of, or E. coli.
No, sir. There are many kinds of bacteria and such which are not killed by the stomach acid.
But then the other side of that equation is, whenever you're having any, like, again, like the sprouted wheat bread, which is the heaviest of all breads, that's where you realize how much the stuff that that you were given maybe when you were growing up, or the stuff that just is like on the lower levels of the store, how much it isn't even really bread. It's just like sawdust that's held together with Elmer's glue. And that's basically, it's like when Mike TV asks Wonka what breakfast cereal is made out of, and he says it's out of those curly things from the inside of pencil shavers. That's exactly what most bread is made out of. I'm looking at that lower level at the, that lower shelf at the Safeway. Here's Don Taylor.
Let's head into science news.
Fantastic. Science is on the march right here at the Legion of News program, which you can find on iTunes. You can also get it on your mobile device at mobile.pdx.fm, and it's available in archived form here at pdx.fm and at legionofnews.com. This is Don Taylor.
After 10 years of comparative slumber, the sun is waking up, and it's got astronomers on full alert. This week, several media outlets reported that NASA was warning the massive flare that caused spectacular light shows on Earth earlier this month was just a precursor to a massive solar storm building that had the potential to wipe out the entire planet's power grid.
All right.
NASA has since rebutted those reports, saying it would come 100 years away, or just 100 days. But an Australian astronomer says the space community is betting on the sooner scenario rather than the latter. Despite its rebuttal, NASA's been watching out for this storm since 2006, and reports from the U.S. this week claim the storms could hit on that most Hollywood of disaster dates, 2012. Similar storms back in 1859 and 1921 caused worldwide chaos, wiping out telegraph wires on a massive scale. The 2012 storm has the potential to be even more disruptive. Astronomy lecturer and columnist Dave Renicki said, "The general consensus among general astronomers, and certainly solar astronomers, is that this coming solar maximum will be the most violent in 100 years. A bold statement and one taken seriously by those that will affect most, namely airline companies, communications companies, and anyone working with GPS systems."
So wait, so it's a solar flare or a solar storm? Are they the same thing?
It's a solar storm, which I guess is...
Maybe a solar flare is a symptom.
A bigger version of a solar flare.
Right. Okay.
No one really knows what effect the 2012-2013 Solar Max, as they're calling it, will have on today's digital reliant society. Dr. Robert Fisher, director of NASA's Heliophysics Division, said the superstorm would hit like a bolt of lightning, causing catastrophic consequences for the world's health, emergency services, and national security unless precautions are taken.
Solar Max. Solar Max sounds like a company that makes extreme sunglasses, or perhaps some sort of a tanning product, you know?
I think this is one of those stories that we are either, it's going to go one of two ways. Either they're going to go, it's not really going to be a problem, and then we won't ever hear anything more about it. Or it's going to come the next Y2K, where somebody's going to latch onto it, and it's going to be like, holy crap, everything's going to come to an end.
Well, and especially because it coincides with the whole, I don't know, the Mayan calendar, the Aryan calendar, one of those things. There'll be some guy who puts up a web page about it somewhere and then gets on the Art Bell show to bump his gums about how we're all going to get pliskened with the solar flare knocking out all electricity on Earth, which is the sort of thing that always has a strange kind of appeal to me. Because, you know, it's just like, well, You know, because you sat and listened to Bruce Hagler and I talking for like 9 hours yesterday during an alleged business meeting about the deal. What new cell phone shall I get, Bruce? My BlackBerry has gone dead on me, and now the world is my oyster. I can have any electronic device of my choosing. So I mean, I'll just sit and nerd out about that. But there is something really satisfying to me about the idea of all technology just being obviated tomorrow. You just sort of being eliminated, because then it's like an immediate form of stress removal. And it's a whole lot of things I don't ever have to worry about or care about ever again. So,
and you know, the Mayans predicted that a giant solar flare would come and knock out GPS units.
Yes, they did. Yes, they did. They were crafty and clever.
Cornea implants grown in the lab can restore vision to the blind, according to early clinical trial results released yesterday. The trial, which took place in Sweden, consisted of 10 adults with blindness from disease or damage to the cornea, the transparent outer covering of the eye. During a 2-year follow-up period, 6 of the 10 patients who received the implant saw their vision improve. In all cases, the body accepted the new cornea implant, repopulating it with living cells and nerve fibers. Senior researcher Dr. Meg Griffith of the Ottawa Hospital Research Institute said, "This study is important because it's the first to show that an artificially fabricated cornea can integrate with the human eye and stimulate regeneration. With further research, the approach could help restore sight to millions of people who are waiting for a donated human cornea for transplantation."
Now, but see, I don't even know who that helps, though, because, for example, like I got the, if you look at my glasses, if you were to take my glasses off and you hold them, you tilt them to where the lenses are parallel, so you can see the thicknesses of the lenses. You'll see that the left lens on my glasses is, as always, this story is only important if it affects me or can help me, Rick Emerson. But if you look at my eyeglasses, you'll see that my left lens is way thicker than my right one. So my left eye is degenerating at a much faster rate. So the doctors, they do the thing when you go in for the eye exam, where if there's something bad looming in the future, they'll try to make you aware of it in a way so they can satisfy their sort of Hippocratic oath of telling you that something bad is going to happen, but in a low-level enough fashion that you're not going to start blubbering and sit around the office and cry, and they have to console you, so that you'll get out, so that they can see the next patient. So they'll say things to me like, "Well, this is going to present issues, you know, in the future that you'll want to be aware of at the appropriate time. But you know, for today, you're all good. Okay, and you just pay out there. Bye now." You know, and then they try to hustle me out of the office, basically having told me that I will go blind in my left eye at some point, like way before I go. You know, my right eye quits working. So, but I don't know whether that's caused by your cornea or not. Or is that just one of those things where you're like, your eye is some balloon that's gradually deflating? And well, why can't they fix that?
I think there are a number of reasons why your sight can go bad. So you would have to ask your eye guy specifically what it is.
Yeah, but I mean, they must know, right? I mean, that's a thing where it's like, it's not a mystery to them.
Well, if he's telling you that your sight is degenerating, he probably can tell there's a specific reason.
I guess what I'm saying is, though, does this mean that eye problems in general, do you suppose, or vision problems in general are going to be fixable? I don't know if the cornea is linked to some specific kind of eye failure.
Well, the cornea is that transparent film on the surface of the eye, and so that's a very specific thing. In this case, what they're doing is they're creating these biosynthetic corneas, which they're making out of yeast, actually, and they grow them. The yeast is genetically engineered to produce collagen.
So they're giving you like a Steve Austin eye.
Yeah, basically. They're a lab-grown collagen cornea, and then they're attaching it to the eye, and the eye is actually there is creating cells and attaching it and growing it to the eye naturally. So it's accepting it as a transplant. But the thing is, it's only, like, say, for example, if Joey Lawrence had actually torn his cornea to a serious degree,
right,
when he got jabbed in the eye with the script, as we reported,
right,
last week, he could get a fake...
Joey Lawrence could see again.
A biosynthetic cornea.
All right. I just want to know why they can't reinflate my eye. Because I think that's the way that he sort of describes it. It's like over time, your eye is pressurized because there's fluid inside. But over time, the fluid gradually depletes, and so your eye changes shape. And he describes it as being like a soccer ball that then looks more like a football over time, because it basically your eye is just sort of deflating,
yeah,
like a sad children's balloon.
Yeah.
And so I just want to know why it is they can't reinflate your eye.
I don't know. You'd think they'd have some kind of device that like a penis pump could just like stick over your eye and go.
I'm not even going to look at you while you're making that noise because it's so fundamentally absurd. I think I would lose my composure for the rest of the show. What was the noise again? Fantastic. You know, when I get my new phone, I've already got my text message alerts on now. Thank you. All right, you are listening to Legion of News right here at BDX.FM. Don't forget the Rick Emerson Show comes your way at 1 o'clock, where Don Taylor will make more penis allusions. So be listening. Also, Mr. Ryan White from the Oregonian will be here, and he'll shift uncomfortably in his seat during the making of those same observations. He'll also do his top five absurdly happy songs that Ryan White listens to when he's feeling morose. We'll do our Mad Men recap, and Aaron Duran has another edition of The Week in Geek. That's coming up at 1 o'clock via the Rick Emerson Show at rickemerson.com. And if you are not a Rick Emerson listener as of this moment, then your opportunity to become one is at hand. And here's what you do. First of all, you write down this email address. It is video@rickemerson.com. video@rickemerson.com. We're talking about the Rick Emerson Grant. The Rick Emerson Grant, which is the awarding of 10 one-month subscriptions to folks who do not have them at this moment. So what you got to do is this. You just make a YouTube video of no more than 2 minutes in length. That is 2 minutes in length or less, explaining why you or somebody you know needs a one-month subscription to the Rick Emerson Show. You send the link for that to video@rickemerson.com, and each and every calendar month, 10 of those month-long gifts subscriptions are going to be given away. And we want to thank our friends at New Millennium Landscape and Maintenance for helping to make that possible. New Millennium Landscape and Maintenance. You can find out more about that at rickemerson.com. Are we at the end of our Science on the March?
We are indeed.
All right. Let me just see if I can. All right, there we go. Here's Don Taylor at the Legion of News News Desk.
A 13-year-old motorcycle racer died Sunday after falling off his bike and getting run over by another motorcycle at Indianapolis Motor Speedway. Peter Lenz of Vancouver, Washington, was pronounced dead by the Marion County coroner after sustaining traumatic injuries. The accomplished teenage rider crashed on a warm-up lap before his race and was struck by 12-year-old Xavier Zayat, who was uninjured in the accident. Medical workers immediately placed Lenz in a neck brace, put him on a stretcher, and began chest compressions while taking him to the hospital. The coroner confirmed his death about 3 hours later, the first at the Speedway since IndyCar driver Tony Renault was killed in October 2003.
Are we sure he wasn't run over by a Marvel supervillain? What was the kid's name?
Peter Lenz.
No, the kid who ran him over.
Oh, Xavier Zayat.
All right.
Yeah.
I'm just saying.
Despite only being 13 years old and listing his profession on the Grand Prix website as kid, Lenz was already a well-known racer. He'd been riding bikes for 6 years, won 9 national championships and 9 regional titles, and appeared to be a rising star in a series that builds itself as a prep for riders 12 to 18 who hope to compete at a higher level. The fatal accident Sunday will most certainly spark a debate about how young is too young for racers to be competing on one of the world's best-known tracks, whether it's inside a car or riding a motorcycle capable of speeds well over 100 miles per hour.
And it'll give television anchors a chance to end sentences with "too far," such as, "Have children's sports competitions gone too far? Tonight, a tragic story of..." Speaking of things going too far, did I see this? Am I wrong about this? That we have yet another, like, 15-year-old, I don't know, like sailing enthusiast who's stuck in the middle of an ocean somewhere, and we're sending people out to rescue him / her?
Oh, probably. Was this the Swedish girl? Or
maybe.
I don't know.
It seems like it's the third one in about 6 months where it's like, what are you doing? Well, I'm sailing around the world, Mom, in a homemade rowboat. Okay, well, see ya. And then the kid leaves or whatever, and then the rest of us have to go like find them when they're drifting in the middle of the Indian Ocean somewhere. All right. Here's Don Taylor.
Kids. Oh, sorry. Oregon Humane Society investigators said they found more than 100 dead rabbits from what appeared to be a commercial breeding operation in Clatskanie. Workers seized 33 live rabbits Friday from the property on Rontala Road and brought them to the Humane Society's shelter in Portland. The dead rabbits were found buried under a pile of rabbit feces, Humane Society investigators said. The cause of death is unknown. Humane Society officials are searching for the owner of the rabbits. The rabbits found on the property were described as breeds used for pets and for showing. Anyone with information is asked to call the Humane Society. Police said two teenage boys who dressed in Ku Klux Klan outfits as a prank attracted the ire of passersby in St. Helens on Friday. The teens were photographed wearing pillowcases and sheets near North 18th Street and Columbia Boulevard. Witnesses said the pair pulled up in a convertible and were holding a flag. Police said several drivers yelled at the teenagers, and some even got out of their cars to confront them. The duo then continued down Main Boulevard. The teens told officers they have no affiliation with the KKK or its beliefs and just wanted to get a rise out of people.
Well, mission accomplished.
Officers said one of the teenagers is the child of a St. Helens police officer.
Oh, wow. Well, St. Helens, the home of Scott Daly. I don't even know how to feel about this story, frankly.
Carrie Doan witnessed the incident and said he saw drivers pulling over to talk with the teens. They were wearing full face masks and pointy hats, and by the time they got to Church Street, several local citizens had parked their cars and got out to have some kind of conversation with these two guys, and before long, the cops were here.
What kind of conversation were they going to have, do you suppose? What conversation is it?
Not doing nothing.
I'm not asking, like, what the kids were going to say. No. I'm saying if you're in traffic and you see two Klansmen pulling up next to you, what is it you're going to get out to chat with them about? I mean, unless...
Well, St. Helens, they might be asking them where they can sign up.
I was going to say, unless you feel like there's a big membership drive or something going on and you don't want to be left behind. Really, what is it... I'm intrigued by what they were going to say or what the nature of the conversation was going to be. I also am not entirely sure how to feel about the kids themselves. Yes, we can all agree the Klan is wrong and whatever, but there is something really perversely amusing about that, about just sort of a, what shall we do today? I don't know. Let's make some Klan outfits and just drive around town and wave at people at intersections at slack moments during the day. Were they in a convertible, you said?
They were in a convertible, they had a flag.
But did you say what kind of flag it was? Like, was it an American flag or
Confederate flag, it probably would have said. It was probably just a plain old flag.
What if it just made no sense? Like, what if it was just like, what if it
a
was
Botswana
just...
A Botswana flag.
Yeah, I was going to say the flag from Mozambique, you know? Or just one of the flags that flies over Disneyland or something. And they just sort of, you know... And I like the idea of them just sort of politely waving at people at intersections.
Hiya.
Not unlike when I was driving the home on the 26th that night, and there was that Jilly the Clown or whatever that waved at me from the other lane. So, I don't know. I think I'm reserving judgment on the kids themselves. I do like the added little Philip that one of them is the son of a police officer.
Yeah.
That's going to be a fun evening.
I'm sure that went over well.
Yeah, enjoy your broken bones, kid. All right, here's Don Taylor.
Let's do entertainment news.
Here's your entertainment news for Monday right here on Legion of News.
The 1960s drama Mad Men and new mockumentary-style sitcom Modern Family took all the big awards at the Emmys last night, while Glee and Breaking Bad won in individual categories. There were also some movie star glamour lent to the proceedings by George Clooney, Claire Danes, and Al Pacino. Danes and Pacino won for miniseries roles, while Clooney was recognized with a special award in honor of his humanitarian efforts for Haiti earthquake victims. Mad Men was named Best Drama Series after an earlier win for Best Writing in a Drama Series. It was the third win in a row for the show, which focuses on the advertising industry in Manhattan in the early to mid-60s. Bryan Cranston of Breaking Bad won his third Emmy for Best Drama Series Actor, while his co-star Aaron Paul received his first award for Best Supporting Actor.
I got to tell you, we'll talk more about this next hour with our Mad Men recap. I, just this weekend, am now completely caught up on Breaking Bad. I have finished season 3. Season 4 didn't start till I think July of 2011, so I'm now completely up to speed. This sounds like, I will say, actually, and this is one of those things you don't want to say out loud because then it just sparks arguments with people. I really am willing to, in my estimation, it's just me speaking for me, you understand, I am willing to say right now that I think that Breaking Bad is the best thing currently on television of the shows that I watch or the shows I am familiar with. That it is probably the best thing currently airing. And I really, you know, it took me a long time to get into that show because it was just so grim. And I like grim. I really do. I like things that are bleak. I mean, my ideal television or, you know, show or movie is just something that goes like down, 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 down. And then everyone gets cancer, you know. And then that's the surprise ending. So, but it was just so dark, and I just felt like I ended every episode just covered in grit and sand and pain. And it took me.
You're not selling me here.
Well, I'm just saying that it was. It took me like 6 weeks to watch the first two or three episodes because I would get about 10 or 15 minutes in. I'm like, ugh, I have to kill myself now.
You see, I've taken like 3 runs at the first episode and just couldn't do it.
So dark. But you know, Seamus kept nagging me to watch. He's like, you gotta watch it, it's awesome. And so finally I was like, fine, Christ, I'll buckle down and I'll watch it. And I got maybe 5 or 6 episodes in, and it just, and some sort of switch just flipped in my head to where I guess I either accepted and was able to deal with how dark the show is, or maybe I was just so impressed with the writing and the acting that it kind of won me over. But then I watched seasons 2 and 3 in like 7 days or something. I mean, I watched 26 hours of that show in less than a week. So I'm now completely caught up. And it's and that guy, especially, it's unfair to do this almost, but especially when you think about the fact that he's just the Malcolm in the Middle guy, you know, for so long. And then he goes and he does that show. That role, of Walter White on Breaking Bad, you just know, too, that that is one of those roles that every actor, like, covets, that all other actors are jealous of because it gives you a chance to really act. Because so much so on television, especially if you're doing a sitcom or something, you don't get a chance to really, you know, to act a whole lot because it's so formulaic and it's very, you know, if you're doing like a two-camera setup or something for a sitcom, it's just, it's very cardboard and there's no character development. That show, though, it's really quite good. I am glad that I powered through it. So I'm just saying this. I think that if you actually really just push yourself to get past the grimness and watch it, I think you will you'll be glad you did so.
Modern Family won the Emmy for Best Comedy Series. Eric Stone Street, who plays the gay son-in-law Cameron on the series, took home Outstanding Supporting Actor. Modern Family writer and producer Stephen Leviton also received an award for writing for a comedy series. The award for Outstanding Supporting Actress in a Comedy Series went to Jane Lynch from Glee. And Glee creator Ryan Murphy won an Emmy for directing a comedy series and said he was shocked. While speaking to the actress about her upcoming chick flick, You Again, Sigourney Weaver clammed up immediately when the subject of her returning to Pandora arose. But then it didn't take much prodding for her to give up a selective hint or two.
I can't say anything. But in science fiction, anything can happen. Because she didn't really die, you know. She went into the tree. She could be so many things. Yes, definitely.
I think Sigourney Weaver sounds stoned.
I can't say anything. But in science fiction, anything can happen. Because she didn't really die, you know. She went into the tree.
Yeah.
She could be so many things. Yes.
You know,
definitely.
It's interesting when you hear her interviewed for this movie, before Avatar came out and she was being interviewed, because I think it was after Aliens where she said she wouldn't work with Cameron again because they butted heads just so. Although I guess, to be fair, James Horner said the same thing. And I think James Horner has said that every single time he's worked with Cameron. He's like, never again. F him. I will never again make a movie. You know, but then you do because he's James Cameron. So, I guess I'm pretending to care, and I really don't care because, you know, whatever. I mean, who am I fooling? If they make an Avatar 2, I'll go see it, but not even really because I might not even go see it. I might just stop by the box office and just drop off my $9, you know, with a note like, you know, Jay, regards, R, you know, and then just and just leave because I feel like I sort of got to support him forever. Cameron is one of those guys. He's like a band that you were really, 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 really into growing up. And it's like, now you feel obligated to buy their new stuff even though you don't care about it all that much just because, well, because they created, you know, because they created those classic albums back when. And I'm not saying Cameron can't make a good movie now, but I'm saying I know he's talented and, you know, and he's a guy who has given me so much. How can I not give back by supporting
these? I kind of feel like that about Tim Burton. Like every time Tim Burton has a new movie, I just go, there's this part of me that goes, hey, Tim Burton movie. And then I remember, like Planet of the Apes.
Yeah.
You know, and I go,
But then you reflect on the fact that you know that he has given. How can you not return the favor? All right.
Paris Hilton's latest run-in with the law began when a motorcycle officer got a whiff of suspicious smoke emanating from a Cadillac on the Las Vegas Strip. Suspecting the odor was marijuana, the officer stopped the car at 11:22 p.m. Friday, and during a check, police say a bag of cocaine fell out of the 29-year-old socialite's purse. The officer followed the vapor trail and the odor of marijuana to the Escalade, Police Sergeant John Sheehan said. While the car was being searched, Hilton asked for privacy and was taken by a Metro officer to a hotel security office.
While in the security office, she extracted a tube of lip balm from her purse. At that time, a plastic bindle containing a substance believed to be cocaine fell from her purse in plain view of the Metro lieutenant.
Have you seen that guy she's dating, the guy that was, I think he was driving the car when they got pulled over?
Would that be Las Vegas nightclub mogul Cy Waits?
Well, he's one of those guys, you know, there's certain, was there a sitcom called Things You Can Tell Just By Looking At Her? Or there was a movie called that?
Something like that.
There's Things You Can Tell Just By Looking At Him. He's that guy that just screams douche, like for reasons that I can't really explain.
He's dating Paris Hilton, so there's strike number one on the douche scale.
When you get a chance, you should Google his picture. Just type his name in. It's like go to Google Images or whatever and type in this. In fact, let's all do it together, shall we? It'll be a learning experience for all of us.
Okay.
Go to Google.
Right now. Here
all
we
right.
are.
And
here
then go are. To the image search.
So I C Y okay. and then Waits, W-A-I-T-S.
Is it like Tom Waits?
Yes.
So what is his first name? Just Cy?
Cy, C-Y. Right. Then I will go to Google Images.
Okay, now tell me if that guy just doesn't look like a colossal douche.
Oh, yeah.
See, but why, though?
He looks like all the other douches that she's dated, though. He's just got that spoiled rich boy.
But that's, that's the thing. It's like I don't disagree with you. I'm saying I can't figure out what it is. There's something about the way the guy looks.
It's the slightly spiky hair with the product in it. It's the sort of.
Is it the open collar? Is it the fact that the shirt's unbuttoned so low? Is that part of it?
It's the smirky look on his face. I'm cool. Yeah, I hate him. I just want to punch him in the face.
This was my response last night because I went from not knowing who he was to wishing that he would, wishing that something bad would befall him while he was in jail in the space of like 12 seconds. So I guess they took her to some hotel place, and she's rooting around in her bag. She goes to take out her chapstick, and then like some cocaine, allegedly cocaine, falls on
she's
the floor.
She's a genius.
But the weird thing about it is, though, and this is the thing about the story that I fixated on, is that they arrested her, but then like...
Then just let her go.
No, but it was like 25 minutes later or something, there was a Twitter update from her that said, "At home in bed watching Family Guy. I love this show, LOL." And so my question was then, does she do her own Twitter feed? Because there's no way that she was home in 25 minutes. I don't care whether they let her go right away or not. You're not going to get booked by the cops and be home in bed sending a Twitter thing like half an hour later or whatever. So does she have somebody who does that? Or is there actually some kind of function on Twitter that lets you do like a time delay posting?
Well, they said that she was kept handcuffed in the booking room, fingerprinted, photographed, and released without bail at about 2:45 a.m.
Right,
Saturday.
Right.
So, I don't know. Yeah, maybe she has she just has a person who does that for her.
Or is there some function on Twitter that will let you post something, or to let you write something that is then not posted until later?
I have no idea.
Are you not at all intrigued by such a possibility?
Not really.
Think about all the things you could do with it. Think about all the applications that there would be for such a device. Most of them nefarious.
Just to make people think that you were somewhere that you weren't.
I'm just saying because can't you? You are not enjoying the. You were.
I can't think of any reason I personally would want to do that.
Because you'd want to rob a bank.
Oh.
I was trying not to come out and say it. Because can't you see that being used as an alibi in some sort of criminal case?
But if that function actually exists, then it wouldn't be a very good alibi because people go, well, you can always just do that thing on Twitter.
That's what I'm saying. So then it plunges further into an era where nothing can be trusted or believed, where everything is a pastel of lies, Don. Fine, whatever. I'm the only one who sees the glorious sparkle in mankind's eternally inventive nature. Whatever.
The cable TV reality show featuring a unique Hillsborough family, Little People, Big World, will be ending soon after 6 seasons. The show stars the Roloff family in their daily adventures as they run a 34-acre pumpkin farm in Hillsborough. Parents Matt and Amy are Little People, along with their son Zach. The other 3 children, Jacob, Molly, and Zach's fraternal twin Jeremy, were not born with dwarfism.
But the phrase little people bugs the hell out of me because it doesn't mean anything. It's linguistically vague.
No.
Little compared to what?
Well, to not little.
What if there was somebody littler than them? Are they still little people? Hmm?
Well, littler how? Like an Oompa Loompa?
That's what I'm saying. Well, look, if you got a little person who's... there is no size for little people, I don't think. If there's a little person who's like 4 feet tall, but then there's a little person who's 3 feet tall... Is the 4 foot tall guy still a little person?
I think I wonder. Is this one of those phrases that came up because they were annoyed with
midget
with
and dwarf
people mixing up midget and dwarf all the time?
Probably, but again, but little person doesn't make any more sense. Little person is just overly broad; it means nothing.
Yeah. Well,
I'm not trying to be a crank. It's not like I care. I'm just saying it's another.
It's a general term, like calling someone black.
It is another one of it's another one of those. Yeah,
or white.
Well, it's just inaccurate is the thing. Like it just. One gets the sense that it's supposed to be, it is supposed to lend a kind of specificity, but in fact it does just the opposite.
But don't you know what someone means if they say little person?
It creates vagueness.
You know what that means? It means midget or dwarf.
I know.
You know what it means.
Okay, but if it means midget or dwarf, then it doesn't solve the problem of people confusing midget and dwarf, does it?
Well, it solves the problem of them being called the wrong thing.
It doesn't, though. It doesn't teach me the right thing. They are, in fact, here's what it
is. It becomes a de facto right thing, though. It's like hot dog is a subset of sausage. Midget is a subset of little person.
That's like saying that instead of teaching people the difference between less and fewer, I should just make a new word called nrr.
Someone on the text box goes, they're freaking midgets.
Now, is that true? They're midgets. They're not dwarves.
I have no idea. I can never remember which is which.
Dwarves are, I believe it is that midgets are correctly proportioned and dwarves are not correctly proportioned.
Then I believe that these Hillsborough people are dwarves because they have the right. Oddly sort of misshapen bodies.
Let me be really clear about this. It's not like I'm offended by the term or something. And the term little person, it doesn't really bother me. I'm just saying it seems like rather than making up some altogether different word, which doesn't solve the problem of public ignorance, they could just, you know, work at making people educated at the difference or something. That's all I'm saying. It's just
That's true. They could.
It just seems like they are. You know, it just seems like they're just muddying the waters even further. If their annoyance is at the fact that people don't make the distinction, then creating like a third term to keep track of doesn't really help that. Also, I'm going to give them an idea. I have a friend of mine who's a producer on that show. So I'm just, if you're listening, Dean, I'm giving you this idea right now. For me, this is Rick Emerson's idea going to you for free. You don't have to pay me for this. Reunion television film for this series for Little People, Big World. I'm telling you, you know how they did like the Very Brady Christmas and the Very Brady Wedding, and they did all the reunion, the spinoff movies. I'm telling you right now, in like 5 years, you do the spinoff movie. Takes place in Hawaii, Little People, Big Island. Bam. There you go.
Did you ever watch any episodes of
Sesame Street, Little People, Big Bird? Okay.
Hawaii 5-0, Little People, Big Kahuna.
See? I'm just...
Did you ever watch any episodes of that?
Every now and again. After What's-His-Name got hit by the catapult, I think I watched a few.
I only watched a couple of them, but I watched one that was awesome where the family all took a trip to... A little people's convention where all of these families and people all from all over the country gather to have like a big time with it. And basically the main reason they were there was because the teenage son, who is a dwarf or right. whatever, he would go there every year and like go to the dance and meet chicks.
Awesome.
Meet like hot dwarf chicks.
Fantastic.
Apparently, he's quite the ladies' man with the little ladies.
Well, you know, you got to look. I mean, he's on television, right? It doesn't really matter. He could be missing his head.
But it was kind of hysterical because it was like, you know, the parents, they were there because it was kind of nice because they got to be around other little people, but also other families,
right.
Talk about family. But really, it was all about like the teenage boy wanting to meet some cute midget chicks.
Why is it? Here's an interesting question. Why is it that show is inherently more compelling than a show about guys who are real tall would be? Like, if you had a show about, you know, normal people are only this tall. These guys are this tall. Nobody'd watch that show. But if you get
I would.
If you get, see, and I don't.
If it was like somebody who's really tall. Like when when you see those.
Like 9 feet tall?
Yes.
Like Ted Cassidy tall?
Yes.
Yeah.
I would watch that because then again, you get into the whole thing of like having to have specially made countertops and taking, like with basketball players who end up having to take the front seat out of their car.
Right.
I would watch that because I'm fascinated by freakism.
I think in America, though, we got a much stronger affinity for things that are smaller than they ought to be than things that are larger than they ought to
be. Tiny things are adorable.
You should be sure to tell the roll-offs that. Aren't you adorable? Aren't you the cutest little television star? Oh.
Who's on TV? Who's on TV? You are. You're on TV.
And then tickle him under his chin. And then wait while he punches you right in the throat. All right.
Well,
this horribly offensive slice of programming is brought to you by Castalia Language Center, a small private school in downtown Portland that offers Spanish language classes for adults. Classes are limited to eight
pequeño.
Students.
Yeah. Muy pequeño.
It's like a... Yes. It's like a clasita. In any event, the classes are limited to eight students, and the reason that matters
is... Or ten,
is,
if some of them are dwarves.
No, see, I'm trying to move forward. I'm trying to get off of that. I'm trying to... See, I was about to make another pun reflexively, and I'm not going to do it, you damn woman. The point is, friends... if you're an adult, your brain works more slowly than a kid, and there's just no getting around that. There's no it has nothing to do with being smart or not. Your brain just slows down the older you get. And listen to me, I have the slowest brain of all, so I know these things. But when you get to be an adult, you just learn differently. And especially if you're trying to learn a second language, you're trying to learn a third language. You just if you had some Spanish education, but you just can't really use it, because how many people graduated from high school? And they took 2 years of Spanish and say, well, say something. And, and it's like if it wasn't diagrammed on the blackboard, they just have no idea how to do it. Castalia Language Center, they offer classes of no more than eight students, and it's classes for adults, and it's functional Spanish, which means as much as you might find this interesting, it's not a place where you go to learn about the history of the language or the language spread or the culture. This is actually where you go to learn the language in a day-to-day, user-friendly sense. Now, I'm going to give you the website right now. It's Portland Spanish. .com. PortlandSpanish Com. It's a comfortable, relaxed atmosphere, but it's also an atmosphere where everybody's there for the same reason. Everybody's there because they actually want to learn how to speak Spanish. And again, you got a class where there's no more than 8 students, and they focus on real-life situations, and they work with authentic materials. It's a small private school in downtown Portland offering Spanish language classes for adults. Please tell them you heard about it right here. Castalia Language Center. You can find out more at PortlandSpanish.com. PortlandSpanish.com, Castalia Language Center. Let's do like one more here, and then we will put a pin in this for the day.
Well, I did want to tell people a couple of interesting things they can watch on TV tonight.
All right,
you know,
well, we'll call that entertainment news.
Yeah. The season finale of Warren the Ape on MTV finds Warren getting stressed out while he tries to produce his greatest work, an autobiographical rock opera, with the help of Corey Feldman.
Realize I have no idea what you're talking about or what this show is.
No. Well, don't worry about it. In the final episode of Ultimate Car Build-Off, the finalists have to make a car or truck that drives on water, since the course that lies before them at Lake Irvine in Southern California takes them 100 yards on land, 100 yards on water, and then the final 100 yards on land. The winners will get $100,000. On Monster Fish on the National Geographic Channel, aquatic ecologist Zeb Hogan travels to the Nile River to search for the Nile perch, a voracious fish that can grow to more than 400 pounds and 6 feet in length.
Fantastic.
The huge predator competes with crocodiles 15 feet long and giant catfish for its food, but Zeb has heard reports that this monster fish, as well as the people who rely on it, may be in trouble. And on Showtime, you might want to check out the movie Killshot, which a lot of people missed. It stars Diane Lane, Thomas Jane, Mickey Rourke, Joseph Gordon-Levitt. It's based on an Elmore Leonard novel and was directed by John Madden, who directed Proof and Shakespeare in Love. Again, that's Killshot.
And what's his name? Joseph Gordon-Levitt is that kid from Brick, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. So you might want to check that out.
Awesome. All right. Well, on that note, friends and neighbors, Legion of News is brought to you each and every weekday by PDX.FM and originates from the studios of the Emerson News Network. At the news
Está
desk.
Está muy bien.
At the news network is Dawn Taylor. Advanced technology and magic provided by Thomas Gill. Executive producer is Bruce Agler. And our chief of staff is Cheryl Katakova. Don't forget. The Rick Emerson Show begins next at rickemerson.com for the low price of just 32 cents a day. Don't you owe it to yourself to laugh. The Rick Emerson Show begins next. This has been another exciting episode of
Legion of News on PDX.FM.